Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 194 of the Pixelated Sausage Podcast for the week of September 8th, 2014. I'm your host, Mark Kuznez, and I'm going to change up the format a bit with this here episode and continuing forward, maybe. And actually, to say I'm messing with the format is a bit misleading. It's going to sound somewhat similar. I'm just going to, instead of recording from start to finish, I am going to instead break it off into segments, basically. And by that, I mean I'm going to talk about a game, and then I'll just throw in one little insult ninja to transition to, say, another game or a different topic so that I can sort of clear my head between transitioning from game to game, or maybe put a bit more of a focus when I'm talking about each game so I'm not immediately jumping to another one while I'm in this game or that game, so that maybe there's just less tangents. Not that there won't be tangents, because I just can't help tangenting all over the place. But yeah, that's going to happen. And I'm going to start with, instead of putting in an insult ninja right now, I'm just going to do one for you live. I want to do both parts. So, insult ninja, shink! And if you're wondering where that's from, just go ask the people over at the Signed In Podcast, because I don't even know why it happened. I just started doing it. And that's a thing. But the first game I'm going to talk about right now is Abyss. And this is one of the, I'd say it's probably one of the top games that came out of Gen Con. I'm not sure if it is released officially yet, though you could get it at Gen Con, and it's the game that had the, I think, five different covers. So if you're really into, you know, collecting games, and if you happen to like this game, it's going to cost you a pretty penny to get every single one of them, unless you just try to find them on eBay or something, or through Board Game Geek. I'll trade for the cover, the top of your box. But it is a sort of hand management set collection kind of drafting game. And right off the bat, and this is something I don't think anyone can deny, it is a very, very, very pretty game. The art is fantastic. It may be the best looking game artistically that I've seen all year. Though, I mean, the art is of a high quality, but I don't know if I'd say the design is of the highest quality, but I probably wouldn't say it's my favorite, because it is fairly bland, wouldn't be right, but it is a bit one note in its color scheme. Not so much the color scheme, but just it doesn't have a lot of variation. It feels very of a very specific singular style, as opposed to maybe having a bit more color or vibrancy. It's a very muted, in a sense. And I can't remember. I think maybe the greens and the blues, or if they're oranges and yellows, there's two colors that kind of blend in with each other. Not so much, but it's just a little bit. And it's a bit annoying, but that's not that problematic. Needless to say, but I'm going to say it anyway, because I need to say it. If it was needless to say, then I wouldn't be saying it right now. But there's needles in my hay, don't you say, Shay? See? I still get on tangents that are even worse when I'm trying to be very focused on a game. But the art is beautiful. It is a very good-looking game. The covers, the box art, the five different ones I have that are just of giant faces, those are very good too. So no matter what you may think of the game, if you have played it or buy it and then play it, it will definitely be a game that looks good on your shelf and on your table whenever you whip it out. Don't whip it out, but whip it out. Whip it good. Okay. So the game works in, I think, three different phases, or there are three things you have to do. First, you have to collect allies, which are really just these various cards that are of certain values and five different colors. And you do this through one of three-ish ways, two or three ways. Everyone starts off with one pearl. This is the currency in the game. The components, you know, in addition to the art, are very nice. It's a very high quality game in terms of production. So everyone has one plastic pearl in the beginning of the game, and you have a little like black seashell case to hold your pearls. And my one issue with those, with the cases, is that I wish the case to hold the non-user pearls, the ones that are just like the bank, I guess you'd call it, I wish that was a different color. Because when I played the game, the bank was positioned in a way that I thought that was another player's case. So I put a pearl in there when I was supposed to give it to him, because it was right next to me. It was right next to him. It was between us. And I thought, you know, of course. I mean, there were like two right there. And I'm like, oh, whatever. So that I wish was just slightly different, if it was just a gold one for the bank or something. But that's not the biggest problem. So when it's your turn, what you do is there's the ally deck, and then you just flip over one card. And then it goes around clockwise and plays 2 to 4 players. And the first person, they get to choose whether or not they want to. It's not a, I've heard some people calling it a bidding game. It's not bidding because nobody's bidding. You're choosing whether or not you want to purchase that card. So you look at the card. If you want it, you can purchase it for one pearl. The first card that is purchased will cost one pearl. Then when somebody buys a card, the next one will cost 2 pearls. And then if somebody buys a card again, the third one will cost 3. And once you buy a card in a round during a turn, you can't buy another one. So you're locked out once you do that. So flipped over, first ally card. Person clockwise, they get to choose whether or not they want the card, whether or not they want to buy it. So they say yes or no. Then it goes clockwise. And then if nobody purchases it, the person whose turn it is can choose if they want to just take that card for themselves or if they're going to continue flipping. And this keeps going until everyone has either purchased the card or they haven't, and it gets to the very end. And then the person whose turn it is will then get a free pearl and the card for free. They don't have to purchase anything. And when it's your turn, you never have to purchase a card. You just can choose to take it in the middle of your turn or whatever. If, when flipping over the ally cards, you get this, like, I don't know, it looks like a giant eel head, that means the monster or this monster has showed up, and you could choose to fight it, in which case you will get a certain item that is on this little, like, score sheet. Or if you choose to avoid it and then, like, let it pass in hopes that maybe you'll run into another one during your turn, or that when it comes to your turn again, nobody will have taken the reward. The little token for that goes up one space, and the reward for fighting it will increase. And when you fight it, you don't have to actually do anything. You just choose to fight it and then get the reward. And the reward could be you get a free pearl, you get 2 free pearls, you get a free pearl and a free random token that just equates to victory points at the end of the game, or keys, which will come into play later on, I'll talk about. So you do all this, and when the person's turn it is who's flipping over the various ally cards, when somebody buys one of those ally cards, when they choose to purchase one, they pay the person whose turn it is. They don't pay the bank, they pay the person whose turn it is. So that's how you get pearls, and would then later on be able to purchase or not purchase allies in the future. So the first round is kind of really quick, just because once somebody purchases a card, nobody else can purchase anyone. Since everyone starts with one pearl, nobody can pay for 2 pearls. So then you're just collecting allies. Another thing you could do on your turn, if you don't want to do the sort of drawing aspect, you can choose to, because the ally cards that were not purchased, they go into piles on the board in their respective color. And when there's a pile there, you can choose to just take an entire pile for yourself. And then that negates, you don't then draw the cards for the purchasing phase. You just take cards instead. So if there's a big stack of cards, or if there's a stack of cards in a color you need, then you could choose to do that instead of the other action. Or the other thing you can do, which is what you want to do to end up winning the game, is on your turn, instead of drawing cards or taking a stack of cards, you can purchase one of the Lords of the Abyss. And I believe when somebody gets seven of these cards, the game begins its final turn, and everyone gets one last turn, and then the game ends, and then you'll score victory points. So you recruit these Lords of the Abyss by spending your various ally cards that you have in your hand. And there's no hand limit unless somebody buys a specific Lord of the Abyss who has the power to limit everyone's hand to, I think, seven cards. And then there's also a Lord of the Abyss who has the ability to block such combative lords like that so that they wouldn't be affected by that specific lord. So when you purchase these, they will have a little icon on the card that will tell you that, okay, you need, it'll have like a red circle that indicates you need to have at least one red ally when you purchase it. You have to spend at least one of those, and then it might have some gray dots, and for each gray dot, that's just any random color. But you can't, if it's just one gray dot, it has to be only one random color. You can't mix, you can't throw in a whole bunch of different random colors. It doesn't just mean however many random colors you want. That means for each gray dot, it means a new random color. And then there will also be a number on that, and that's how much the total value of your allies when you spend them you'll have to use up. And then after you purchase a lord, what you do is you keep the lowest valued ally you used to purchase that card, and then you just keep it, and that will be used for victory points at the end of the game. And those cards that you've kept, the highest one you have by the end of the game will be the one in for each color will count towards victory points. So you are collecting you're recruiting your various lords this way, and they have their specific abilities. But then also, some lords have keys on the card, little key icons, and there are also keys, tokens that you can get. I think the only way you can get the key tokens is by fighting the monster once it reaches a certain reward level, and you can choose to take a key. And the point of keys is to purchase parts of the city, which will, I'm pretty sure the parts of the city only give you victory points for the end game. I don't think they have anything that actually affects the game as it's being played, but I'm not exactly sure. This is the part of the game that I really, really don't like. And the reason for this is, unless the person who explained it, because I didn't read the rule book, unless the rule is different, once you have three keys in your possession, whether it's keys that are on cards or, you know, the key tokens, you have to take a part of the city. And why I don't like this, because you know, you're like, oh, it's just strictly victory points for the end game. That's good, right? No, it's not good, because when you purchase part of the city, you have to cover up three of your lords. I mean, if you have more, then you can choose, you know, which one. But if you have less, you're going to be covering them all up. And when you cover them up, what happens is you lose all their abilities. And as I said before, there's a lord who can limit everyone else's hand size to seven cards. And then there's a lord that can block such lord's abilities. I had the lord who could block that ability. But then I was forced to purchase a part of the city, which then covered up that lord. And then I no longer was able to block that. And then, it's like, dude, where's my car? And then, no, and then. But, and then, I had to, I'm saying then way too much. I had to then limit my hand size immediately back down to seven cards, which is just annoying. Why should I be forced to purchase a part of the city immediately upon receiving or possessing three keys. You know, maybe I would rather keep the abilities of my lords than have this stupid city. You know, it's almost like, I mean, they consider the keys and all that and the parts of the city to be something you want, something that's desirable. But when I was playing, I more often than not found them undesirable. I did not want them. Of course, I would want them during the end game, but then I could purchase them later, something. So that was just kind of annoying. I don't like being forced to do something when I don't find a good reason to be forced into doing it. And that kind of, because when I played the game, I was a bit iffy about it. I wasn't sure that I really liked it because it just seemed to throw in a lot of aspects of various games, you know, and because like the purchasing of lords in a way reminds me of purchasing of towns and citadels, except, you know, this would be all the towns that have abilities. And then there's just the game it actually reminds me of most, even though it's not really that much like it, is Splendor. Just because I feel like, okay, we're all collecting these allies in Abyss, or these token, these poker chips in Splendor. Then we use them to purchase either lords or in Splendor. I don't know. What were they? They're just resources, I guess. Yeah, no, because it was like the ambassadors or whatever in Splendor you get through owning a certain number of resources. So in that way, it reminds me a lot of Splendor, but Splendor is a lot more simplified. It's a lot quicker. Some people have, I've talked with people who say Abyss is a really quick game, and maybe it will be if I play with people who really, you know, they know it like the back of their hand. So that might help out too. Because, I mean, it's hard to judge a game based on one play, based on your initial playthrough, and also when you're playing with mostly people who haven't played it or only played it once as well, just because it's not going to move as quickly as possible. So that number on the side of the box that with Abyss, it's 45 minutes is what they say the game will take. That probably won't be the case. And it also just depends on who you're playing with. And for the most part, I was a full game of four people I was playing with. River and I'm not sure who the other guy was. They were both fine, but then there was a new guy who, he's a nice guy, but I think he may have been hard of hearing or just wasn't the most attentive. It's just whenever we had the drawing phase and it's like, oh, do you want to buy this? Do you want to buy it? He never would acknowledge yes or no. At least when it was on my turn, I'm like, I'd have to keep telling him like yes or no, and I'd ask him, and then I don't, he wouldn't hear me at first, and then I would ask him again, because I don't want to just assume, even though I look at a card and think, okay, that's not anything anyone would ever want. But he wasn't always the most attentive, and he would forget, not so much the rules, he forgot them at like one point, but he would forget the aspect of it where it was, okay, so first purchase costs one pearl, second, two, third, three. And he would, once or twice, he tried to purchase cards twice during the turn. But it's, I mean, I'm not going to blame anyone who has just been introduced to a game about that. It just can't help but affect the experience. I mean, so it's a game I definitely have to play again, because it is a very good-looking game. I feel like I would like it, just because there are a lot of parts of the mechanics and all that I like in other games. And it just feels like it's maybe a bit too complicated for its own good. In a weird way, I just feel, it's funny me saying that, oh, I feel like it's too complicated because it's mixing too much stuff together, when I say the same thing about Dead of Winter is actually a really good thing. That's what I like about Dead of Winter, is that it takes a lot of aspects from different games and puts it into this one game. And maybe why I'm okay with that with Dead of Winter is because it's a complicated game, yes, and it's taking things from different complicated games, whereas Abyss feels like it's taking a bunch of mechanics from simple games and then putting them together to make a somewhat complicated game. It's not, I wouldn't say it's so much, it's not so complicated or so difficult to grasp. It's just that there are a lot of things going on. And I really do hate that forced city purchase, which if it's not, or if you're not obligated to purchase part of the city, that will definitely change my immediate reaction to the game and when I play it in the future. But yeah, it's okay. But a game I definitely have to play again. And once again, it's Abyss. It's designed by Bruno Cathala and from Asmodee. So the you know, the pedigree behind it and all that, really good. The art, fantastic. I feel like there's a good game there, and I just need to give it more time. I'm not sure how it would play with two people. I feel like that would really not work that well, but I'd be interested in trying that out. But I feel like four people is the right number of people to play it with. Three wouldn't be that bad, but four, it feels right with four people. But yeah, so that was Abyss. So if you are a board gamer and you frequent Kickstarter at all, you will probably notice a few things that show up more often than other things, such as plain decks of cards, which don't really show up in the tabletop section anymore. I don't believe so. But then there are dice Kickstarters, there are various component Kickstarters, and one component that gets a lot of campaigns going is coins. Various metal gaming coins for board games or RPGs, or, you know, you can use them for whatever. You don't have to use them for games, but, you know, it makes sense that you would use them for games. There is a new Kickstarter going on right now from Never Stop Tops and Coins for various sets of metal gaming coins. And I got sent a few samples of their coins, and I really like them. One of the things I really like is that the coins, they have a good weight to them. They're also very thick. Of all the coins I've seen, they may be the thickest, which I really like. I'd prefer coins to be more on the thick side. Their smaller coins are 2.5 millimeters, and the medium and large size coins are 3 millimeters in terms of thickness. And then the width is, for the small ones, 25 millimeters, then medium 30, and the large ones are 35. So they're a good size, and the visuals on them are very nice. But what I like is that they're made of, a zinc alloy, I believe. And while they have a nice weight to them, they're not so heavy that, well, it would be kind of bad if you felt strain from holding one coin or even a handful of coins. But they are both weighty and then just like not overbearing or overwhelming in terms of their weight, even if you're holding a handful. So that's nice. They also, probably one of the best parts of it is that they did some kind of process, antiquing or whatever you'd call it, to make the coins look like they've actually been used, like they've lived some sort of a life, so that they're not really shiny or anything. They have like tarnish. They have just a bit of texture in them. They have what you can put a story behind them if you want. Say you're playing an RPG or something. They have a little life to them, if you want to call it that. And that's nice, because I'm not a fan of shiny coins. I prefer pretty much anything that shows it has some, I was going to say defect. These coins don't have defects, it's just they look like they've actually been used and aren't just like, oh, these are a prop. It's more so like, oh, this is just a coin. And the art on them, on all of the coins, it's very nice, and they pop out to a nice degree, so you can really feel the designs on each of them, and they look really nice. They stand out well. There's no like errors or blemishes with the designs. There's nothing like, oh, this is kind of wrong or anything. There's a lot of nice detail put into all of them. They sound good when you're just handling a whole bunch of them, so they have that nice metal sound, coin sound, which I like doing that. I should just keep doing this for the rest of the time, and then you're going to just hate me because you can't really hear me when you're hearing all this, so I'm going to put these down. They're down. But yeah, they're nice, and I know that, like I said right in the beginning, there are a lot of Kickstarters that pop up, you know, each month for various gaming coins. There are many producers of gaming coins, so you might say, well, why should I go and back this or check this Kickstarter out over other ones? And I can see that point, but what I would say is that, like dice, there are, you know, there are a whole bunch of different kinds of gaming coins that are of different kinds. I mean, some I've seen, they are of the shiny sort. They are of the more, like, you know, this is so brand new and pretty and shiny. It's like, it almost feels like jewelry at that point. It's like, oh, well, I don't want to use this because it's so pretty and shiny. But these, you know, they have more of that, oh, I've lived a life and use me. Don't just like put me in your little box and be like, oh, this is, don't ever touch these things. Just, so I really like that. But with dice and the same thing with coins, I look at it as the more options we have, the better. The more the merrier. That's what my mama never said, but I'm saying it now, and people have said that plenty of times, just not my mother. But this isn't about my mother. These gaming coins are just, they're really nice, and, you know, if you don't like these, there are other ones out there, but of all the ones I've seen, I would say these are probably, I wouldn't say they're my favorite, because I don't know which ones I'd call my favorite, but I do like these over a lot of other ones. I really like the fact that they're not shiny, because that just really bothers me. And I like the fact that compared to some other coins, the visuals do really pop out of the coin, both literally and figuratively, or I could say literally and literally, because people don't care about definitions and words and contradictions anymore, apparently. What else does apparently mean? But I really like that, and the visuals are nice, but they really just stand out. It's almost like a pop-up book, but they would really have to pop up. But sort of like when I deal with shadow boxes, where you have a shadow box and you have something inside the shadow box where it just sort of, it comes out a little bit. I like that look to it. And yeah, they're just nice. And I like the fact that they're solid. They are solid and yet not so heavy that it's like, oh my God. Because the largest coins, I would say they're maybe, probably a little smaller than, say, a half dollar. But they don't have that weight. Because I don't think half dollars are actually that thick. But so like maybe a little bit bigger than a quarter or around the size of a half dollar. But the thickness of a silver dollar without that extreme weight. Because I've never liked that about silver dollars, that they're so, I mean, I understand why they are, but it's just like, oh, this is so heavy. It's like, I would never want to carry these around, but these are both weighty and not too weighty that if you were, you know, participating in some RPG or something and had a whole bunch of these, like you were just robbing someone, if you even were doing something where you had a treasure chest full of these, you would have pieces that are weighty, but not so weighty that you wouldn't be able to carry that case, which is nice. And, you know, it's, you'd be like, oh, these are coins that have actually been used. It's not a treasure chest full of unused coins that are probably going to get me arrested in my RPGs. I've never seen it. I shouldn't talk about RPGs because I've never really done any of that. But yeah, the coins are nice. You know, there are plenty of uses for them. RPGs, board games, or whatever you'd want. You should definitely check it out. There will be a link in the post for these gaming coins. that are once again from Never Stop Tops and Coins. There is currently 26 days ago, so they got a good while. They're at about, I don't know, I'd say 40% of their goal, I'm guessing, estimating. They're at $9,225 of a goal of $25,000 for a set of 25 coins, which would get you 15 of the small coins, 5 mediums, and 5 large. That's $20, and I think for any additional set of 25, it's an additional $15 add-on. So, it's not too bad. Check it out. And, of course, there are various other pledges you can go after. That was just the base one. And the link will, once again, be inside the post. So, definitely check these out. Hear that? I love the way they sound. That's so nice. Oh, look at this. This one's the one for me. The Viking. Look at that beard. I'm gonna kiss it. I'm gonna kiss it. I didn't kiss it. I just kissed air. Because I don't know where these coins have been. They've lived a life. Why would I kiss these coins? That would be horrible. I guess I could wash it. But really, can you wash away the life of a coin? but yeah. I like them, and maybe you will too. So at least give them a look-see. So yeah, there were some coins. That's a horrible way to end it. I'm sorry. but yeah, check it out. Another Kickstarter going on right at this very moment is a collection of 10 fairly quick dice games, and it's called Five Packs. Five P-A-X. And the dice games range from strategic games, sort of like chess. There is a chess-esque game. It's actually called Pure Chess. To dexterity games, and more bluffing, push your luck. I'd say the more traditional, not traditional, but the kind of standard quick dice games like Zombie Dice, or you know me and Zombie Dice. Let's not even talk about that game ever again. But it's a great little collection of dice games that work well for both filler games. But I think they fit more so. I think they're more so suited for a travel game. So kind of, it's a great family collection of games. And I think it's the kind of game you would throw into a suitcase. You'd throw in the glove compartment of your car and just leave it there. Or just anytime you're going somewhere, you can take this small little box, which it isn't that big. It's, say if you had two overlarge decks of cards, and then you just put those together. That's how big it is. You can take this collection of 10 games in a small size and just take it anywhere with you. And there are the games that, maybe the more strategic games the adults will like and the dexterity games kids will like. But yeah, I really like that there are a good variety of games in this small package. And some of the games I like more than others. The one games that I'm not really the biggest fan of are like football and 21. Football, I just think, is a bit too complicated for its own good. It's not Pure Chess, it's Morph Chess. I knew Pure Chess wasn't right, but I think Pure Chess is a PlayStation game. Morph Chess, that's what it's called, not Pure Chess. But it's purely about chess with morphine? No, not morphine. Morphin. Mighty Morphin Power Rangers? Tangent City. So what I don't like about the football game is that it just seems a bit too complicated for its own good. And also, what I don't like is that, and it's, I guess it just has to depend on who you're playing with, but with football and 21, they both involve rolling dice and then hiding them behind your hand. And maybe it's just some of the people I play with, and I feel like with kids, they would maybe have a tendency to do it or not. I mean, I guess it depends on how you parented them, but there is that ability to cheat, to just change the one, you know. I guess you're going to be looking and seeing that, but rolling and maybe, I don't know. I feel like there's a way that cheating could happen, and that kind of bothers me. I prefer when you have those hidden things that it's more so just you choose the dice, the faces you'd want. So that kind of bugs me. But other than that, like football, eh, that was okay. But that's just one of 10 games. 21 is basically like blackjack. You have 50 rerolls throughout the entire game of that. And you roll two dice, you keep those hidden. And then you can choose to either hit or stay after that to get to 21 without going over. So it's about getting closest to 21 without over, without getting over, just like blackjack. So you can hit, which would then you take a dice, you roll it, then you know you can choose to hit again until you're satisfied. You know, the same person will do the same thing. And if you won the hand, you'll get 2 points. If you get blackjack exactly, you get 4 points. This keeps going until somebody is down to only 2 rerolls, and then whoever has the most points in the end wins. That's nice. You know, the whole hidden part. That's it also makes more sense in there. The football game just kind of seems a bit weird. It seems like it was overthought. But then you have morph chess, which I mentioned earlier, which I really like because I like chess, and it's really basically chess, but simplified and put into a smaller form factor. And it's surprising how, I don't know why it seems so surprising how well it actually works. And it's just like, I've seen other attempts at simplifying chess, but they lose something in the process. But this feels fairly well. The only problem I have with it is that it's kind of weird, or just when you're playing with dice and then you have to remember, oh, the number 4 is a rook and number 5 is a queen. So it's the one, you have 6 dice set up, each player does, in their respective color. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. You just have one of each. That face showing face up. 1 is a pawn. 2 is a knight. 3 is a bishop. 4 is a rook. 5 is queen. 6 is the king. So the way it works is you roll. Each player has one black die. You roll that. Whichever face comes up, you then can either move that specific piece, that specific die on your board, whatever way it can. So if it was, you roll a 3, you move the bishop diagonally in whatever direction. If you can also, if you roll that 3 and you have the 3, the bishop, you can move the king in that same way. If, say, you lost the bishop and rolled the 3, then you would have to move the king in that way. And basically, you just keep playing until somebody gets rid of the king, captures the king, like in chess. And I like that. It's a really well thought way of implementing chess in a more simplified manner. And I'm always up for that. And I think it's a way of getting people who maybe like chess but are like, oh, this seems like they feel like they're not smart enough, even though anyone is smart enough to play chess. But I really like Morph Chess. It may be my favorite of the bunch. There's also Trapped, which is a game about trapping your opponent's little cube in a confined space so that they can't move anymore. And the beginning of it is really just setting up. You have dice in your color, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and you move your little cube to an area. Then you put and you'll do it in the order of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. One of those die in a space that is up, down, left, or right of your cube. And then you basically kick it. So if you put one below your cube, then you would kick it downwards towards as far as it can go whether that is the edge of the board of these crates that are on the board, or if there's another die already there to that die. And once all the dice are on the board, you then start on your turn. You would roll the black die, and then you would, whatever number that is, you would remove that from the space wherever it is, and then do the same thing after you move your character, kick that die in whatever direction you choose to kick it in. And you keep doing this until someone is trapped and can no longer move. It's a fun game, and the only problem I've had with it is that sometimes it can run long, where it's just sort of like you keep going back and forward, back and forth, because nobody's able to trap the other player. So there is a tendency for that, but overall, I enjoy that game. Bowling is one of the dexterity games. Tennis is kind not really. It's a bit dexterity too. Bowling is nice. It's just you have it's set up like a regular bowling lane. So you have one lane of one, then two of your second lane. Your second row has two, and then the third has three. They don't have the fourth row because that would require too many dice. You put stacks of two dice, and then you're basically just rolling, not exactly flicking. I can't think of the term you would use. Like it's not swiping, but you're just sliding. There you go, sliding. You slide it down the lane, and you're just trying to knock off the top dice from, and it is not as easy as it may seem to do that because you will end up pushing the bottom dice into other ones, and then you will create like combined columns that make them even more difficult to do that. Because you may feel like you should, but definitely do not when playing the game flick super hard or anything, because that's just that you're gonna make a mess, and it's just you're gonna ruin the game. It's gonna just turn violent. It's like the way I play air hockey, which I end up flicking the puck off the table so many times. But you're just trying to do that, and then the person you do 5 frames, and like with regular bowling, this the scoring works the same. I'm not gonna go over that. That's in the rules. And once you hit the fifth frame, you get a strike or a spare. You get a sixth frame if if it was a strike, and then another strike, you get a seventh frame. And high score wins. There's also an interesting game called Save the Princess, which is sort of a, I want to say RPG, but it's not like you have RPG elements. It's just you're battling monsters, trying to get to the princess in the castle. And each monster has a certain number of HP, health points. So the first monster has 10 HP, and you would put on your score marker a cube for its health, and then your starting health is at 50. You can choose to roll 1 to 3 dice. If you roll 3, you have a better chance of killing the monster. Ones count as a miss, and then everything else counts as a hit. So 2 is 2 hit points, 3 hit points, etc. If you are attacking and you do not do enough damage to kill the monster, it then retaliates with the same number of dice you used to roll. So if you rolled 3 dice and you only managed to roll a 1, a 4, and a 3, doing 7 damage to the initial monster with 10 HP. It would go down to 3 HP, but then it would roll 3 dice. And if it rolled, say, 5, 5, and a 6, you would then take 16 points of damage, and you only have 50. So that is pretty detrimental. If you roll only one die, then the monster will only be able to roll one die on that turn. And on your la when you kill a monster, you would get health back for every point, every value that you surpassed its remaining health. So when it had the first monster, when it was left to only 3 HP, if I rolled and did 14 points of damage, I would then get 11 points of health returned to me in addition to killing the monster. And you keep doing this until you reach the princess, whoever gets there first and wins. If you happen to die, you just go back to the beginning and start over. And that's the way it works. It's a nice Little game. I like that one too. And it's a game you can also have fun with solo. And then tennis, I think, is the last one I'll talk about. That one is, I think, probably the most interesting to me of the bunch of that I've played. Because it does a fairly good job of implementing tennis into a simple, just small dice game. But it's very interesting. It's because it's different. The way it works is you serve and you will set up, each player has a little board for their side of the tennis court. You roll and you're trying to roll and then have, depending on which action you're doing, dice land on either your board or the other board. So I think with serving, you have to start the roll and it has to initially drop on your board and then roll and reach your opponent's board, and then whatever that value is of dice that are either on the player's board or partially on it, completely on it or partially on it. And that value becomes your serve value. And like in tennis, and sort of, I think it's more so like badminton in terms of the way you can score, because you can score in tennis when it's not your serve. But I think you can only do, when badminton or also like volleyball, it has to be your serve in order to score. So you do that, and then the person will attempt to return it, and they roll however many. I think the server can roll 1 to 3 dice. The person returning can roll 1 to 5 dice on that return to hit the ball, and if they, I think, if they roll a number, and these that roll for returning, for hitting the ball that has been served to them, those have to land and stay on their card. And then if they have a value of that is equal to or greater than the serve value, they successfully hit the ball. And then however many dice they didn't use, so if they use 3 dice to return the ball, then they would use the remaining 3 dice and then roll them and try to get them to land on the other person's card to figure out the value of their hit on the other person's side of the court. If they don't land any there, then it becomes a miss. Basically, they'd hit it out of bounds. When you're serving, if you didn't manage any dice on the other person's board, it'd be a fault, of course, double fault. You would lose the serve. But it's an interesting game. It works as a tennis game, and I do like it. I just need to play more of it. It's a very interesting game. I looked at it and I was before reading the rules and I was like, I don't know about this one, but it actually works surprisingly well. It can be a bit difficult, but it's the difficulty is equal for both players, so there's that. But yeah, that's some of the games that are in five packs, which is a game called Five Packs, full of 10 games. And it's like I have a prototype version from the actual I don't know what I was about to, I was like I had a mini stroke there or something. But I got a prototype version from Gallant Games, who are the makers of this collection of dice games. They also did, I think, I'm not sure if it got funded, but Scrapyard Empire, which was a cool looking game. I think that was a recent project, maybe a month or two ago. But I really like the concept of this collection. I just like having a collection of games that are small and quick, and for the most part, I enjoyed a good chunk of them. I think there's a good amount of value in here, and I think even the games I don't enjoy, other people might like. Think the variety is good. I think it's more so than anything, I think it's a great game for families. Like I said, I think it's one of those kind of games that you just throw in the car, throw in the suitcase, wherever, and it just is there. It's like, oh, maybe we're stuck in a rest stop. Well, let's pull out five packs, play some games. And I think the Kickstarter campaign will do what a Kickstarter campaign should do, which is not help create a game, but just give the game better components, because that's the only problem, is that like the box is very lightweight. I mean, I taking that around with me, I'd feel like it's going to get crushed by anything all the time. So having a nice box, having nicer boards and all that, I mean, that would just, that's all the game needs, really, is nicer components. Of course, maybe they could work on the football game, but overall, I had a surprising amount of fun with these games, and I look forward to playing them some more. I definitely look forward to giving a go with this tennis game some more, and I look forward to hopefully seeing it get funded so that the components can be improved, because that's really the only thing the game needs at this point. But yeah, that is 5 packs from Galleon Games, and definitely check it out. It's on Kickstarter right now, 20 days to go, a goal of 9,500, and they could definitely use some funding. So if you like dice games and like the idea of just having a solid collection of dice games in a small package that you can just have with you whenever you're like, I just want to play a simple game right now, this is something that may be exactly what you're looking for. So once again, that is 5 Packs Games, and there will be a link to it in the post. So yeah, check it out. And that does it for this here episode of the Pixelated Sausage Podcast. Once again, I am your host, Mark Kushnez. Y'all can find me on Twitter at Kush3, on Instagram, mkush, and of course the site is pixelatedsausage.com. If you're looking for some other great podcasts to listen to, please check out the Signed In Podcast at signedinpodcast.com, the Sports Car Unleashed Podcast at scunleashed.com, and by just searching Google or iTunes, or just clicking on the links on Pixelated Sausage, check out Undercover Unitards and Kicking Out at 2. That is kicking out the at symbol and the number 2. And the intro and outro music for this here episode and every episode of the Pixelated Sausage Podcast is a song by my brother Liam Campbell off his first album, Sanctimonious. It's called Curse of Beer, and if you're wondering why you can't understand anything he's saying, it's because it's all in Icelandic. So if you're not really a fan of the whole Icelandic thing, well, that's the only song on his album that he recorded in Icelandic. So still check out his music, whether or not you like this here song. So adios, everybody. Have a great rest of the week and enjoy the music. Lirir maður frá frakasti, kutu, ég glendi ekki því sem þú gerði, kutu, þú mátt ekki að vala sér sokki, kutu, finnur þú ekki fyrir núna, farðu, 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 þetta maður mín, elska mín. Mother of me, let that kiss a bad, let that kiss a bad man. Sjáðu því sem þú gerir, kutu, núna sjáðu því sem ég mun gera, kutu, hjartan skal deyja aldrei, kutu, en þú er ekki hjörtu, farðu, 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 þetta maður mín, elska mín. Mother of me, let that kiss you by, let that kiss you by me.